Now, as we mentioned, recording artist Moby is our guest DJ today, which means that every song you hear between the segments was hand-selected by Moby for the Bryant Park Project.
He's like a sommelier.
There you go, a music sommelier. The other day, he came in, delivered the playlist, and he told us about a new website called Moby Gratis, which provides his music for free to student and nonprofit filmmakers and artists. He also has a sixth studio album out in the works. He gave us a special sneak preview. The name of it is Last Night, and it's due out in March, but some singles have been released, and it definitely has this whole retro vibe on some of the tracks. We're calling the New York when Moby first moved here back up 20 years ago as a young artist. We started the conversation with the new album. Moby, I read that you made this new record in your home in New York City. What kind of setup do you have?
Well, I mean, I've lived in the Lower East Side since about 1989, and I've always had some sort of rudimentary recording studio at home. So most of my records I've either made all at home or doing the recording at home and mixing elsewhere. So I've got, I don't know, a relatively basic electronic music studio. But now what's happened, almost everything I can do in my studio, someone can do on a laptop. And so, you know, so I spent the last 20-some-odd years collecting all this, you know, old electronic equipment and synthesizers and drum machines. And now it's all pretty well replicated on laptops. So it makes me feel like, I don't know, I could just as easily get rid of everything in my studio and just make records on my computer.
But would that be any fun? Would you have any atmosphere? Don't you like to be around all your stuff?
On one hand, it is nice to have a room in your home that's just dedicated to making music. But there's a lot to be said. I mean, I have friends who make records on airplanes and who make records on trains or in hotel rooms or on the beach. And I don't know, that seems like a pretty attractive idea too.
The beach one especially.
Yeah. Well, except for me, because I'm so like pale and pasty. I don't do too well in the bright sun.
The first single drops on January 14th, and you wrote on your blog that it started as a mistake, Alice, mm-hmm. the song. How does a song start as a mistake?
Well, one of the nice things about having your own recording studio is you can go in there and it's a very unpressured environment. You know, if you're paying $5,000 a day to work in a recording studio and you have engineers around, you feel a lot of pressure to actually create things that are good. And if I go into my studio, it's relaxed and I just start playing around and, you know, plugging synthesizers into different effects boxes. And every now and then, stuff either doesn't work or it works incorrectly. And this song, Alice, there was a bass line I was playing, and I was playing it through an old distortion box. And the distortion box, maybe the battery was broken or something was wrong. And it ended up sounding so much more interesting than I had intended. And so the song was basically written about this technical mistake.
Where can I hear it in the song when I go back and listen
it's
to
the
that
whole,
specific
the,
thing?
It's the whole bass line.
The whole bass line is that mistake.
Yeah, basically when the song starts, there's just this droney sound. Mm-hmm. And that droney sound is, there's no instrument creating that sound. That's just this broken distortion pedal. And so then when you play the bass line through the distortion pedal, it's sort of the bass line interacting with this broken piece of equipment.
Who's the vocalist on Alice?
Well, Alice,
or the sample you took.
Alice is it's like a Benetton ad because there are altogether five vocalists on it. I'm singing the choruses with my friend Amelia, okay. who's a burlesque performer who lives in Fort Greene, and then one of the vocalists, the main vocalist, is a man named Ainsley, who's Jamaican but he currently lives in the UK, and then there are two other vocalists or three other vocalists who are all Nigerian. So it's just a hodgepodge of people from all around the world.
Were these people that you had heard of, or were these sounds that you've just been collecting over time? Or?
Well, my friend Amelia, the burlesque performer, she's a friend of mine who's a burlesque performer who sings well.
Just hangs around at your house.
And then Ainsley is a rapper. I had heard some of his music on MySpace. And then the Nigerian rappers and vocalists are friends of someone who works in my management office.
There's a song on the album called Every Day. It's 1989. Where were you in 89?
1989, I was here in the glorious city of New York, and I was born here in Manhattan, or I was born in Harlem, actually, and I grew up in Connecticut and moved back to the city around 88 or 89. And so 1989, I was living on 14th Street and 3rd Avenue and DJing at a nightclub called Mars, which is on the West Side Highway. It's not, now it's a parking lot. And at that time, I mean, like, living in New York, it was the middle of the crack epidemic.
Oh, I remember. I moved here in 8188.
Yeah. So downtown Manhattan in 1989, it was a really different place.
I lived one house over from the Kenmore on 23rd Street, that SRO where people used to stagger out with needles in their arms.
I had one of my best friends actually grew up in that SRO, which for the listening audience stands for single room occupancy. It's basically you go and you rent a room for the night. And there were these welfare hotels and SROs that were just like the seventh level of hell.
So in 1989, you're living in New York City. Did you write this song about that time? Did you try to recreate the sound of that time?
Well, the song Every Day It's 1989 is... I've always loved big, over-the-top, piano-driven rave anthems. And I know they're not very fashionable, they're not very trendy, but I love them. And so this song Every Day It's 1989 is sort of me writing a big over-the-top piano-driven rave anthem. And really, 1989 was sort of when that type of music had its apotheosis. So
you're listening to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, and we're having a nice conversation with Moby about his new record and some other projects he's been working on. On this new album, there are 16 tracks. That's like a record and a half compared to what some other people put out. Mm-hmm. Did you just have all of that in you and you felt the need to get it out, or was there a reason why you decided to just put so much music on one release?
Well, there's, because I have my own studio, whenever I make a record, I will put, you know, 14, 15, 16 tracks on a record, but I'll usually write around 300 or 400 songs to go on around that time. Yeah, so I have between 5,000 and 6,000 unreleased songs. So I just go into my studio and I just keep writing and writing and writing and writing. And then when it comes time to put out a record, you figure out which songs sort of make sense to go on that record. And in this album, Last Night, it's a more dance-oriented record. I mean, the idea behind the record was to take a crazy 8-hour night and condense it into 65 minutes. And so I just picked, of the 300 songs that I wrote while I was working on the record, I picked the 15 or 16 that I felt best worked in that context.
So what will you do with the other 285 songs?
Well, the other songs either just sit on a shelf to never be heard, or they get released as B-sides, or I put them in movies. I started this website, MobyGratis.com, which basically gives free music to filmmakers, to indie filmmakers and nonprofit filmmakers. So a lot of the music that doesn't get released on the album will get released through MobyGratis.com for, you know, student filmmakers to use as they see fit.
What made you decide to start MobyGratis.com? It's really neat. You just go around the website and you log on, and then if I'm a student filmmaker or nonprofit, I can use your music.
For free, yeah.
That's great. What prompted that?
Well, I went to SUNY Purchase, State University of New York at Purchase, and they had a really big film department, and especially an experimental film department. And going to SUNY Purchase, I just made a lot of friends in the world of like indie and experimental film. And their biggest complaint is always licensing music. You know, they'll want to use a piece of music and they'll contact the record company, and the record company doesn't call them back, or the publishing company doesn't call them back, or the record company will try and charge them too much. So I started this website, MobyGratis.com, to just sort of try and circumvent the whole process. So this way, an indie filmmaker or a student filmmaker can go there and just, the music's already basically pre-licensed and they can just use it for free.
Have you heard back from any student filmmakers yet? Anybody who's used it yet? Or is it just so nascent?
Well, we started not really promoting it, but we started telling people about it, I guess, in August or September. Because I don't want to promote it too widely, because it's specifically for filmmakers.
Right.
We've had tens of thousands of downloads. You know, people have just been coming on and downloading it. And some of the films already have started to win awards, student film awards. So.
And now that we know you have 300 songs sitting on the shelf,
lots
that's
and lots
amazing.
Of music. Well,
I'm still, my mind's blown on that.
But part of, with the creative process, I think that one of the biggest problems people have with the creative process is self-editing. You know, I mean, the truth is you only ever need to start criticizing your creative output or editing yourself when you're going to share it with other people. You know, and I think that so many times writers and photographers and filmmakers and musicians, they beat themselves up during the creative process, and really you should just beat yourself up when you're getting ready to share it with people. You know, because there's no harm in making terrible art as long as you never share it with anyone. And if you give yourself that creative freedom, you actually increase the chances that you might make something good.
So what you're telling me is it's not necessarily 300 good songs.
Oh, no, absolutely not. No, there are 300 pieces of music that I've written, and some of them are good, some of them are terrible, a lot of them are just mediocre. But I don't worry about the quality of the music until I'm actually going to play it for someone.
All right, the press release for your new album, which comes out in March, there's this great line in it that says that you've been unfairly given the reputation as, quote, a joyless militant as the result of the way he once expressed his beliefs and has been frequently characterized by the British music press as a teetotaling vegan Jesus freak, end mm-hmm. quote. All right. I know you're a part owner in a tea shop, or you were anyway, called
yeah.
Teeny.
Mm-hmm.
So you drink tea.
Yeah.
That part's true.
Well, there's a... Basically, I have this reputation. Like, for example, I was living uptown for a while, and I moved back downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these rarely factually correct gossip websites was writing about this, and they were disparaging me as being like someone who does yoga and is humorless and politically correct. And the truth is, I'm just a drunk who makes music. You know, like I hang out in the Lower East Side, and I stay out till 5 o'clock in the morning, and I go out too often, and I drink too much, and I like tea and yoga, but I don't do yoga. I have nothing against it. But it's just – it's strange when people you've never met
yeah.
have an idea about you that is so completely different than how you actually are.
Aside from letting me ask you all these questions about your work and your personal life, you were really nice enough to DJ our show, to pick a music list for our show because mm-hmm. we have a lot of music in the show, in and out of segments. What did you think when you first got the assignment?
Well,
you can be honest.
I mean, I love the idea of playing music on people's radio shows. But sometimes I'll pick music for radio shows and be relatively restricted. You know, like it's happened, like you'll go on like a German radio station, they'll ask you to DJ, and they'll give you a list of 10 songs to choose from. And this
case, the
other
10 you would like.
Yeah. And so in this case, whether there were restrictions, I don't know, but when I heard about it from the record company, I just went through my iTunes and picked 19 songs that I liked and threw in a couple of my new ones.
Okay.
And ended up with a playlist that is not, I hope this is okay, it's not very contemporary. In fact, I think apart from the music from my new record, the most recent song is a Talking Heads song from 1977. Everything else, like, I mean, there's some John Lee Hooker songs and some New York Dolls and David Bowie. So most of the music is from, like, the 60s or the 70s.
Do you have a 60s and 70s association with NPR and National Public Radio?
No, not at all. I just, like, it was really this sort of, like, going through my iTunes playlist, just grabbing 19 songs that I liked.
All right. Moby, thank you so much for DJing for us and for sitting through all these questions.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It was fun. Thanks.
So that was a little bit of my Moby interview, and there's more Moby on the way via our website at npr.org/Bryant Park. We posted Moby's entire playlist for our show, put up an audio commentary of him discussing some of the songs in detail with the music mixed in.
And that audio includes a sneak preview of another song off his upcoming new album. And of course, there is always video on the site so you can see what it all looked like. Check it out at npr.org/Bryant Park. And coming up right here on this Bryant Park Project, it's human growth hormone time. We're going to talk about HGH. Yankee Andy Pettit says he was just trying to come back from an injury, so maybe that's okay. Some people don't think that's so okay. We'll get into it next.
And even though it's Wednesday, we got the fever, Saturday Night Fever. Stay tuned. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.